Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketing leaders podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster. Together, we hope to explore trends, lessons learned, and get inspiration from the top D2C marketing leaders today. Joining us today is Alvaro de la Rocha of Bespoke Post, an e-commerce subscription box company. They've been on a great ride for the last 11 years. They believe that men didn't like to shop, but still love cool stuff. Alvaro brings 15 plus years of marketing experience with a digital focus and expertise across a variety of services to Bespoke Post, and we're super glad to have him with us today. Alvaro, thanks so much for joining us. For the listeners
who
don't know your brand, why don't we begin with you telling us about your brand journey and the wild ride you guys have been on for the last 11 years?
Yeah, of course. So I think at the simplest statement of it is we're all about helping people find quality products from some of the world's best small brands. So that's kind of at the heart. That's our kind of our mission. And but now there's been an evolution, right, and a journey behind that, as you referenced. So we started off as a subscription company, and that's still kind of, you know, the flagship offering. So that's what you referenced, the Box of Awesome. So at the core of what we do is for club members each month, we assign subscribers, club members, a box. So on the first of the month, you get an email saying, hey, this is the box we've selected for you. The boxes are all themed, all cross category. It's not a box of samples. There's a story behind it. So we've done everything from fun travel bags to grooming sets to a smoked cocktail set. So anything you can imagine, we've done throwing knives in a box before. So it really just runs the whole gamut. And so you're assigned the box and you have 5 days. And if you want to, you can switch your box, or you can decide not to purchase for, you be a club member with us for a whole year and not have to buy anything. So that's where it started, right? Subscription only. But then we layered on an e-commerce component, non-subscription part of the business, because we were discovering so many amazing products and small brands that we didn't want to kind of be confined by the box and price point that we need to kind of adhere to on the box side. So now we have a fully loaded e-commerce store, again, cross-category, that again features some of the great products from all of these amazing small brands we find. So that's at the heart of it. And so, as you mentioned, it's been 11 years now going, and it's been amazing. It's really, actually, some of the product you kind of see is behind me. It's just amazing to kind of be on the front lines of really just cool stuff.
Let's tease out a little bit about that small brand narrative. I think that's one of the fascinating things about Bespoke Post, because I'm a guy who loves to discover cool, unique stuff that I might not get exposed to. And that's one of the, I think, unique things about your brand.
Yeah. You know, the line we've been using in some marketing materials you'll see here and there is unique finds for curious minds. So I guess, Marcus, you would put yourself in the curious minds category, where psychographically, what we know from our customer is they like discovering new things. That could be new products, new brands. And so usually it's those smaller brands that it's hard to keep up with and learn about. So we have an amazing buying team. That's what their job is, to go out there to trade shows, scour the internet, and find some of those amazing up-and-coming brands and also up-and-coming products, like new product types and lines. So that is kind of the core we did. And it's always been there. But I think actually, when COVID-19 struck and there's a lot of small brands that were concerned, right? Because we didn't know what was going to be come of that world. And so when that happened, we made a pledge to buy X million of dollars from small brands to like kind of give them the security that, you know, they have a buy coming. And that's when we really crystallized even further. Like, we've always been about small brands, but we never talked about it enough, we thought. And so, yes, recently that is what kind of we've made the center of our mission. It's always about kind of discovering products and small brands.
I would wager that in a case where you engage with a small brand for the first time, that's a huge positive impact to their bottom line.
Right. And it's I think even beyond the revenue impact and how we engage with them, I think we become a great marketing opportunity, because we developed a large audience now. And so it's a great way to kind of, for these small brands, many of whom may just be starting out, to kind of reach what may be their core demographic. So, you know, we have, when you're in the box, especially if it's a successful box that we continue to like buy into, you were talking about pretty large orders that we'd be placing to kind of help fulfill that. But we also have an e-commerce shop that is almost like lower commitment. So we don't have to work with brands that can only do, 10,000 unit runs on something. We have a place also for smaller buys. But yes, it can be a huge benefit for some of our partner brands.
I'd like to hear more a little bit about how you guys defined your audience. You call them, curious minds, as it were. I love that term. What do they look like and how have they evolved over the last, 10 years?
Right. So when we started, we specifically were targeting men. And then you mentioned a little bit in the beginning, the original subscription part of the business and the Box of Awesome. Originally, the thought was, and remember, this is over a decade ago, so I do think this mentality has changed. It may not be the case anymore. But back then, it was like there was so much focus on the power of the purse and so many e-commerce destinations, probably more so tailored towards women. We thought, like, what would a destination look like more tailored towards men? And so one of the maybe stereotypes we could say about men is like, we may not be the best shoppers always. And again, I think this has changed. But back then it's like, so what if we create something where we did the looking, we did the curation, we were doing the finding of the great brands, the great products, and then offered it up in a subscription model. But as we've evolved, we've kind of stripped away a little bit of that hyper focus on men, because we discovered it doesn't matter. It's like no gender neutral. And so that began to make us think about, we don't need to have that layer of definition on it. We are still, for the most part, 80% men. So we still obviously attract that customer base, but we have just great products. So, that has been an evolution of what our customer looks like from a demographic standpoint. So still largely male, 25 to 45 is kind of the core. And then from a psychographic standpoint, it is that desire to discover, like you mentioned, like you have, many of our customers have, because obviously we're trying to introduce you to new things all the time. So by definition, if you're looking for a tried and true and you're going to get the same thing each month, we're probably not the place for you. But if you like discovering new things all the time, that is core to what we do. Also, our audience tends to be more outdoors, and they enjoy the outdoors. And that's been a trend we've seen continue to rise, even further bolstered, I think, during the pandemic. So that is a kind of a nice little mix of our psycho and demographics.
I'm right in that sweet spot. And I think that there's a good chance for our listeners, I just joined, but I think there's a good chance my LTV may look pretty high. I'm curious a little bit about how you're marketing to those audiences.
Yeah.
You've seen it expand a little bit. You mentioned, many of the products kind of feel gender neutral, still 25 to 45. I'm sure Meta is a big part of your marketing strategy to that audience, yeah. But how's it evolved and where do you see it going?
Yeah, there's probably like three or four distinct phases when I think about, so the company's been around for, 11 and a half years. I've been here, I was employee number two. So I've been around for like 10 and a half of those. In the first phase is we didn't have marketing budgets, right? We were bootstrapped. There was just like five of us around a table in a co-working space. And so the strategy there was, Facebook posts were huge. There's before Facebook advertising would work for anyone. So this is like me and one of the co-founders would stress each day about our organic post for the day, because that was going to be our main traffic driver for the day. Affiliate and rev share deals, anything like that, partnerships, it's all we'd focus on right at the start. Then that's phase one, right? And then into phase two is really a huge turning point for our company. And I think really what helped bolster the DTC revolution we've seen over the last decade and the number of brands that have proliferated was Facebook figuring out that the mobile newsfeed and seeing that, and then lookalike audiences, and really them figuring out their targeting, their algorithmic targeting is just obviously has been the stuff of legends. And I was advertising on Facebook before it worked, so that's how long I've been doing that. And once it started working, it was like from one day to the next almost, we started spending more ad dollars because we had a place to spend it, and that was Facebook. And then they bought Instagram, and Instagram started working soon thereafter. So our phase two of our marketing strategy was largely digital direct response focused media. So Facebook, Instagram, we've had small spend limit, spend buckets with Reddit and Pinterest and Twitter at different times. TikTok is now part of our advertising mix, but that second phase is really about driving efficient growth. So we've always been smart growth and efficient growth with smart unit economics. We've never grown for growth's sake. So when we are targeting, our CPAs are built off LTV to CAC ratio, right? So we're trying to make sure we're making money on any customer we're getting. And now let's say we are in kind of in a third phase, I would call it. And this is kind of post iOS 14, where it has been a little more difficult. Our spend is not as efficient from a direct response standpoint. So now we're introducing more almost a brand building into our spend. And you know, we have still a pretty low awareness out there. I've heard, and this is both an insult and a compliment, you're the biggest brand I've never heard of. I'll hear that sometimes. And I think there is an element of, because we're so direct response focused and been uber targeted, you know, we want to start building that brand awareness and building a brand and like what we stand for. A
couple things to tease out there. Thank you very much. And I feel you, because I've gotten that comment before. Quad, you're the biggest agency I've never heard of. And yeah, that's kind of like a stab in the back sometimes when you don't. Okay. Curious to follow up, brand building. I know you guys have, you know, gone to TV a couple years ago, and that's something we're hearing in some of the industry events we've been going to, that companies in our space are starting to focus a little bit more on brand as a key driver to their marketing spend.
Yeah. So last year was one of the first big tests we did, and actually on YouTube specifically, we did a brand test. My Google reps are going to love that I'm talking about this on the podcast. I'm going to ask them for some ad credit after this is done, but we did a mass market test. So as I mentioned, we've been very direct response focused, right? So we've optimized towards conversion. And so in this YouTube test, we chose a couple, you know, three markets actually, and we had just optimized towards impression and just trying to get broad reach out there. And the ads were different. We have a campaign, the Bespoke Postman, which is an extremely entertaining campaign created by our amazing creative team. And we ran those. So they're really brand spots. I mean, there's a direct response layer to it. We three markets we ran in, and we had three control markets, and we saw after 5 months it had paid off for itself. So the results initially weren't there, right? But over that period in those markets, we just saw sustained and continued higher revenue, better retention rate of people who were already customers prior to running those spots. And so that gave us a confidence to then begin testing into other channels. Right. So now this year, not only we're increasing that YouTube brand test, but we're going to be testing into Facebook, TikTok, TV, maybe even out of home, but it's very much from a brand with the goal of raising awareness versus we're on all those channels already, but it's from a kind of a sales, driving sales perspective, a direct response perspective. So you mentioned TV, actually, we're still in purely a direct response TV mode, and we haven't yet tested into brand for TV. Really, YouTube was the first place. But another thing is not just about paid media, right? Well, the huge focus from building the brand is the content we're creating and the own channels like social and our website. You know, I'm biased, obviously, but I think if you go to our site, go on our social, I think you're going to see just, like, very polished and elevated.
It's a great experience.
Know, yeah, work there.
It's a really nice experience, first class. Okay. So if I'm one of what I think I'm hearing you say, because this is a buzz conversation in other places where we're engaging,
right,
is incrementality. And you're being very intentional, sort of conventional test and learn AB sort of approach to incrementality.
Yep. Like I think it's because of our heritage of being so direct response focused. Me and the co-founders would not have been comfortable just saying, okay, let's just start spending X number of brand dollars. And, you know, we kind of know it might do good for us or not. No, we wanted to test it and see what worked. And that's, I think this mass market test has been a great way to do that, right? It gives you a great way to A/B it. And it makes it a little more costly and it's a little slower learning because we're taking like a methodical approach to it. But it gives us more confidence that when we want to start investing more, we will know what works and also like how long it takes to work and what that impact is. I'm always going to have the direct response base and a majority of our spend, I expect always to be direct response focused.
Yeah, sure. And I'm curious, we often talk to brands that, you know, they hit a threshold where Meta alone isn't enough. And it sounds like you're kind of gone over that and you're really diving into different ways to bolster that direct response in a crowded environment.
We so you know, ever since Meta started working for us, or Facebook back then only started working for us, it has been our number one channel from a spend perspective. And I think it probably holds that it's like consecutive month streak. It's still number one. But we've always been very conscious of having diversified spend, because things like, we knew that something like an iOS 14 could happen. And you need to be diversified and not be over reliant on one channel. YouTube influencer is something, I want to say about 2 years ago, we started heavily investing in. You know, we tried the Instagram influencer route and it didn't work for us. And maybe we weren't measuring it well enough. But YouTube seems to be something that does work for us. I think it's a little more tangible. It's videos, people are able to kind of explain it a little bit more. And that has been a great new channel to introduce to the mix that is less reliant on that kind of that signal, right? That the iOS 14 change kind of made people lose.
Right, it's killing people.
Also focusing in on retention and like increasing lifetime value, because sometimes you probably over index on kind of driving cost of acquisition lower and lower, versus there's another side to that LTV to CAC ratio, and it's the LTV part. And so how can we increase that lifetime value so that the CACs we are getting are still, you know, are sustainable?
And that's part of the reason why, for example, you have the e-commerce store, so that you can drive LTV to loyal customers. How are you approaching those customers from a marketing perspective to build into that relationship and to build LTV?
Right. And that actually, when you talk about the journey earlier, the e-commerce store is an interesting part of that, because you're right. When we first introduced it, you know, we really saw it through the lens of a way to increase the lifetime value of our customer, but also we're finding all these great products. And it was a shame if, like, if it didn't fit into a box, like, it doesn't mean we shouldn't carry it. But initially, and still to this day, like, a majority of spend does come from our subscribers. However, again, over the last year or so, the e-commerce store is becoming a business of its own. And we realize, you know, in the universe of people who are interested in subscription, you probably have like this small circle, right? But the universe of people who are interested in buying cool stuff is a massive circle. And it may not include people who want to be introduced to subscription model. So whereas before it was an LTV increaser and that was its main kind of function, now it's becoming a way to increase our total addressable market and look at people who may have not considered us before and now are. So now an e-commerce store is to be more about, like, can we break even or close to break even on the first purchase? How can we drive repeat purchase rates? How can we increase the LTV of a e-commerce shopper, which is going to be a little different than the LTV of a club member, a subscriber. So it's given us a new toy to play with. And so now, and they're mutually beneficial. And there's a flywheel there because just like subscribers, by having an e-commerce store, their LTV is going up. We have people who maybe are introduced to us through our e-commerce store who might become subscribers and are interested in that as a thing. So it's a very symbiotic relationship. And so just, it's amazing from a marketer standpoint. I'm very lucky to have like these two kind of sandboxes to play in.
Very cool. All right. Two part question. What's the biggest obstacle you guys have gotten over at Bespoke Post in the last 10 years? And what do you see as the next big obstacle in the next few years? You know, what's keeping you up?
I think there might be a couple initial obstacles. When we first started, we were one box a month. And so that was a little limiting, right? Because it meant if whatever box we were releasing that month wasn't for you, you'd skip it and we'd have no way to like retain that revenue and we'd just wait for the next month. And when we were smaller, that's all we could really do, right? But as we've grown, we now launch 20 to 30 new boxes a month, and we give our customers choice. And what that also allows us to better assign boxes, because our assignment process is such that, Marcus, when you signed up, you probably saw you went through a profile quiz, right? And so you told us your interest level in different categories. So that becomes the first input in how to assign you a box. And then we start getting a purchase history for you. Like, for example, Marcus, what did you get for your first box?
The Weekender.
The Weekender bag. So maybe in like a year, we might come up with another travel bag and we know you've purchased one before. And so you might be more likely to get assigned that box than that. So as we build out more product variety and introduce an e-commerce store, right? the first hurdle was just variety and more of that. So I think that getting to that scale where we could do multiple boxes and introduce more option was a huge one there. And then tied into that, and we've already kind of went over this, but how to increase lifetime value when we have a fixed box price. I always used to be jealous of the Stitch Fixes of the world who, you know, they'd send you a package that had like five different articles of clothing, all varying price points, and basically you'd only get charged for what you kept, right? Which was great about that is that if you found like a sweater and a pair of jeans and a pair of socks you really liked, in that one shipment, you could be getting like $200 worth of stuff. Our boxes were always like $49, and that was the end of story. So how to increase that lifetime value, and that's where the e-commerce store came in. That's where you're actually able to add items to your box shipment. You know, I could just say like refinding, and maybe we'll never get to the pre-iOS 14 world, but kind of getting into a new equilibrium of efficient scale and growth. You know, we've made progress back towards it, and we're just not fully back to where it was before. So I think we have to kind of rediscover what our marketing mix should be, our mix of brand versus direct response, and our mix of subscription focused ad spend to e-commerce focused ad spend. So I think over the next like 2 or 3 years, it's gonna be that like multifaceted like jigsaw puzzle we got to figure out, and what's, you know, the right mix.
Probably what gives you a little bit of a jump start on some of those problems is your zero and first party data set, at least with your existing customers.
So we've always been, I mean, I'm guessing almost every company says this, but really data centric, and we have the benefit of having access to a lot of it because we've been around a while and we have a large club member base, but also since we're cross category, you know, we can build profiles of people, and like we can begin to do a little bit of like, oh, if you bought this, you might like that. And we have things like, you know, when we introduced the profile questionnaire, we didn't have that from the start. But as we started building more boxes, we realized, oh, you know, we need early signals to understand what to put in front of our customers. And, you know, when we introduced that survey, it increased conversion. And we added 10 to 14 additional steps before checkout. And we were very worried about that. We were like, oh, you know, the old truism, like if you add more steps to checkout, it's going to hurt conversion rate. No, it helped. It helped it. And you give us that data, you speak up. And then as you purchase with us, all those signals keep getting added to the mix. So yeah, the data component is a huge benefit we have. And one we try to continually utilize, not only from an acquisition standpoint, but from the retention standpoint, as well as we look to drive lifetime value.
Sure. The more you know about me, the more you're likely to serve me something I really like. And frankly, that's what the consumer expects today.
Right. And I think we're just the tip of the iceberg for us, because I think there's still, like, for example, if you come to the shop homepage, you're still going to get a very similar experience to many others. And so how do we begin to take all that learning we have from people and personalize your kind of homepage experience? We're beginning to like try to do more and more of that, but we're not there yet.
All right. Well, one more work question. If you could look back on Alvaro of 10 years ago and wish you knew something then that you know now, what would it be?
Oh, good question. Well, I'll tell you the thing I knew that I wish I had done, but back when Facebook started working for us that 1 month, I joked with the co-founders and some friends, like, oh, you should buy Facebook stock because I think you figured it out. Man, that would have been a smart decision.
That would have been smart.
Yeah. I think investing in brand earlier, if I could go back, I think there's a little bit hindsight being 2020, because I think back pre-iOS 14, our spend was so efficient, we could afford to actually spend brand dollars to test it out and test into it and see what the impact of it was. But it's because it was so efficient that we didn't see the need to kind of invest in brand spend. So it's a little hindsight, but I look back, I wish I could told, like, you know, myself from 2018, be like, the going's, you know, like good, like just like test into it. But right now, because I'm in that state, that's what I would probably go tell myself from 5 years ago.
Gotcha. That and buy Facebook stock 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
That's a big one. What recharges your batteries outside of work? What are you doing to keep yourself fresh?
Yes. I mean, so I have a family, a beautiful wife, and an 8-year-old daughter who we just got back from a spring break vacation, and a dog. And I think that, like, grounding that each day is amazing. But I am an extreme consumer of content, and that actually energizes and recharges me. I listen to podcasts, I watch TV and movies, I read books and long reads. And it's the joke in my household that unfortunately, my face is always on a screen of some sort or in a book of some sort. But that's what I really enjoy and I love. So I think that's the thing I do.
Well, what's a book you can recommend for us?
So I just finished so this is a non-business.
Okay, that's all good.
I just finished The Tourist, which I enjoyed, a spy novel of recent times. So excellent book. And then the best recent book I read in the last year or two, I would say, is Project Hail Mary, which is by Andy Weir. And it's who wrote The Martian, which became the Matt Damon movie. So it's like his second novel, I believe. Good. That one was a great read.
Well, thank you, Alvaro. It's been great having you here today. I really appreciate your jumping on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
To share your journey. If our listeners want to get hold of you, how do they do it?
Yeah, I'm not that active on the socials, especially on Twitter, but LinkedIn. You just look up Alvaro De La Rocha on LinkedIn. I'll try to be good about checking it because I'm also bad at checking that, but I'll try, I promise you out there.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alvaro. We really appreciate it. This has been Directly Speaking of the D2C Marketing Leaders podcast. And thank you very much for joining us today. We look forward to having you tune in again. Have a great day, everybody.